Thank you, this is Dr. Lemon.com. I'm your friend, joined as always by my coach, Dave Tramonte. The UFC is back in the Apex this weekend for UFC Vegas 89, headlined by Rose Namajunas versus Amanda Ribas. We'll, of course, be breaking down that fight, as well as some of our other favorite fights on this main card as part of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays, where we'll also give you an underdog and a parlay to make your wallet fat this weekend. Plus, as always, we're bringing you the interviews you know and love. Kicking off the show this week is our interview with Lupita Godinez, who is fighting next week, as well as, a little bit later on, our interview with Angel Pacheco. But before we get to any of that great content, I do have to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Game Up Hard Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Hard Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, this is no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage with 4.9% alcohol by volume, a special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. It's a drink that's, well, it's really drinkable. Should you stretch before you drink it? Well, it certainly couldn't hurt, because Game Up is not a hard seltzer. Hard seltzers just didn't work out. Game Up plays entirely in a league of its own, and it comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit punch, and grape. It hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Game Up is for MMA maulers, urban fitness freaks, peak-bagging badasses, tough mudders, beer league brawlers, hot yoga hotties, high handicap hackers, committed cornhole huckers, or even just professional poolside posers who game up and get after it. Ask for Game Up wherever it is you buy beer or hard seltzer, and bring it on home for the team. Game Up brings you this episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast, and it starts right now.
The hosts are ready. The fighters are ready. Listeners, make some noise if you are ready for Top Turtle MMA with Shockwave and Gumby.
All right, and joining me today is Lupita Godinez, who fights Virna Jandiroba at UFC Atlantic City. That fight is on March 30th. So, Lupi, I wanted to start here. You know, obviously, you're coming off of that huge win over Tabitha Ricci, a fight that a lot of people saw catapult you into contendership in this division. I know it went down as a split decision, which I thought was kind of surprising. But when you were in the cage at that time, was it surprising to you to hear the judges' scorecards where they were?
Yeah, you know, to be honest, when I'm in a fight, it's hard to, you know, when you just finish a fight, sometimes it's hard to think about, like, exactly the scoring, because, you know, that is, she's getting hit, I'm getting hit, you know, it's a little bit hard. Once I watched the fight back, I was like, yeah, that was kind of weird. But that's why they say, don't leave it to the judges.
Absolutely. And was your coaches telling you anything about, like, how this might be scored? Or, you know, were they surprised at the fact that, you know, a couple of judges saw that for Tabitha?
Yeah, they did. But, you know, it went to distance. So that's what happens. And we've seen horribles and falls, you know, in the fights. And that's the way it went. And, you know, that's it.
Right. And obviously it goes your way too. And now that puts you at 4 straight wins. You know, you get to check the rankings on Tuesday morning. Your number 10 is next to your name. What was it like seeing yourself? Like, I mean, you shot up there pretty quickly up in the strawweight rankings.
Yeah. You know, it's great. It's always good to see yourself growing and climbing that ladder, right? You know, everyone wants the opportunity to do that. So it's good, you know. I like to see that, just because I have put so much work. I have changed my camp completely. I have changed my life pretty much. So, and I'm continually, you know, changing. So just to see that number is just one, like, okay, we're doing things right. We're going the right direction.
And so talk us through a little bit of those changes and maybe what caused some of them. Because, you know, I know obviously you've changed back and forth between, you know, camps in Mexico, camps in Canada. You know, what's the status look like right now, and what was sort of the decision making behind that?
Yeah, you know, like I met, I went to Lobo Gym about 4 years ago. And, the first time I was there, I was like, this is the team that I need. This is what I want to be. But of course, you know, to make a big changes, to make that, it's not that easy. You need money, you need you know, you need balls pretty much to do a big change like that. I started with my old team, you know, they were my first coaches, they were my first everything. So it's obviously a little bit scary to make that big, a big jump, a big decision like that. But you know what, once I started growing and I started like facing opponents that are harder and you know, all of that, that everything is just more difficult. Of course, I had to make the decision if I want my career to go to the next level, you know? And I know I cannot go wrong training with Lobo Gym. We don't only have Alexa Grasso as a champion, Irene Aldana that, you know, fought for the belt. But we also have all the training partners that I get there. They are like amazing. The coaches are helping me. They're amazing, you know? So cannot go wrong. And that's, you know, I'm so happy. Best decision I have ever made for my life, for my career, for everything. You know, I get to be back in Mexico. I get to, yeah, to get back to my roots, to get back to that, you know, that I have always wanted to do that for me.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Now, I am going to take you out of Mexico with this next question because I wanted to ask you about your sister. She clinched a spot in the Olympics by placing at Pan Ams. Of course, we're talking about Anna, because your other sister, obviously a phenomenal wrestler in her own right. But I wanted to ask you, you know, what is it like, you know, knowing that your sister is getting a chance to compete at the Olympics? And of course, I got to know, are you planning on going to Paris to watch her?
Yeah, of course, you know, super proud of her, super happy. She's actually here with me. She's helping me with you know, the final little details from the camp too. It's amazing, you know, I'm proud of her. And I do want to go watch her, but it all depends of my fighting, right? If they want me to fight in September, then of course, that's pushing it. It's too much traveling. I gotta be focused. You know, I cannot be just on the other side of the world when I have a fight coming up. But yeah, you know, let's see how everything plans out, plays out, and go from there. But I'm so happy, super happy. You know, super proud. Cannot go better than that. Perla is trying in May to try to get that spot, and yeah. They're working really hard.
That's awesome to hear. Now, I'm curious too. You said she's down there training with you. I have to imagine some of that is because you're fighting a name like Virna Jandaroba, who is somebody who loves to be on the mat, right? Jiu-jitsu's kind of always been her very best trait. What did you sort of think of Virna Jandaroba when that was the opponent that they offered you for your next step?
I thought it was great. You know, I thought, you know, it's a great match for me. It's a great opportunity for me to show my skills too, you know. She's top five. Yeah, it's a great opportunity. And of course, you know, she's been helping me with the wrestling and she knows how to move her hips and she knows how to move, you know, she's gone to the Olympics for a reason. So I cannot, you know, go wrong with her.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned the wrestling and the jiu-jitsu of Jandaroba in the fact that you're working on your wrestling. Do you feel like this is a fight where, you know, you're completely happy taking this to the mat as well? Do you like your mat skills against hers? Or is this one of those ones where you're a little bit more focused in the defensive side of your wrestling game?
Yeah, you know, I'm ready for whatever. If it hits the ground, I'm ready for that. If we have to cross, so I'm ready for that. For striking, I'm ready for that, you know. Once we step in there, we will see. We have like 20 game plans, you know? Mm-hmm. So I trust my coaching, my coaches, and I know they'll tell me to do exactly what they're telling me to do.
That makes sense. Now, you mentioned too that she's number five in the world right now. This is a chance to go from number 10 into the top five really, really, really quickly. So I of course, have to ask, you know, how close do you feel you are to that title shot? You go in here, you run through Virna Jandaroba. Are we talking about one more fight? Are we talking about two more fights? Are we talking about title next?
Yeah, you know, I mean, of course, I see myself fighting for the belt, see myself as a champion, but I'm not going over Birna, if that makes sense. I have this fight, which is like really important, the most important one. And once this happened, as soon as I get off the cage, I'm going to call my manager and talk to the UFC and see what's next.
I like that. So, of course, now let's talk about it in the cage. I always like to end these with a prediction. How do you see this one ending come March 30th?
You know, I will like to finish with my hands.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. This has been Lupi Godinez, who fights Virna Jandaroba at UFC Atlantic City. Once again, that fight, March 30th. Lupi, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that interview with Lupi Godinez. I, once again, I'm Daniel Gumby Freeland, joined now by my co-host Shockwave Dave Tremonte. Dave, I got to start here. UFC 301 has got a familiar face on it. The King of Rio, Jose Aldo, coming back to the UFC to fight Jonathan Martinez. Give me your initial reaction. What do you think about Jose Aldo getting another shot in the UFC?
It doesn't move my needle, to borrow a phrase from Dana White. I think there was a lot of mileage on that tank when he retired, as he probably should have. Never going to tell someone not to earn money. He wants to come back. That's fine. I don't know. Maybe a long layoff. Maybe he's got one more good win in him, but he's not a future title challenger. I'll say that. We know at lighter weights, post 35, it never goes well. So I'm not excited for it by any stretch of the imagination, and I don't think this is really going to go well. I have a feeling maybe he needed a payday. I don't know, but it doesn't excite me. How about you?
Yeah, same with me. It doesn't excite me. You know, you mentioned the age and the later weight classes, and he is 37 at this point in time. Jonathan Martinez, also a guy who can sort of hang with just about anybody on the feet. So it's also like not even a great matchup. And also, you would imagine if you were going to try to get him one more fight, you would do something fun or something wild, like run him against Dominic Cruz, like in the fight we always kind of had wanted. And instead we're getting, you know, no offense to Jonathan Martinez, but not necessarily like the biggest name guy. So yeah, I'm with you. Doesn't necessarily move my needle, but I bet you that it pops a little bit, being that it's down in Rio.
I will tell you what moves my needle, and it's Fights, Dogs, and Parlays, our favorite segment on the show for UFC Vegas 89. Let's get into it, Gumby. We'll break down a couple of fights, give a dog we like, a parlay to play. But before we do, does anyone sponsor this edition of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays?
Absolutely. Fights, Dogs, and Parlays brought to you by Game Up Hard Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Hard Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, it's no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage with 4.9% alcohol by volume, a special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. And it comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit, punch, and grape. And hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Ask for Game Up wherever it is you buy beer or hard seltzer, and bring it on home for the team.
Our main event has the former champ Rose Namajunas as a minus 175 favorite to Amanda Ribas, a plus 145 dog. Namajunas finds herself on a rare two-fight losing streak, trying to get back in the win column here. Who you got?
So I'm going to go with Rose Namajunas here. I originally was in on Amanda Ribas, and the money seems to be coming in further and further on Rose Namajunas. And I find myself a little bit more convinced that Rose Namajunas sort of just has the ability to stay away from the physicality of Amanda Ribas. I think she can sort of pick her way apart. She looked kind of good in that fight against Manon Fiorot. Manon Fiorot being a very high-level striker. I think Rose hanging in there in that fight tells us a little bit more than we need to know. I also like the team she's been training with. I know she's been training with Greg Nelson, Brock Lesnar's former coach up in Minnesota. So I really think that she's got all the right tools here. I think she probably avoids the physicality and picks her apart.
Cameron Salmon, a minus 110. Peyton Talbot, a minus 110. Salmon's coming off a loss. Talbot, 2-0 in the UFC, has looked impressive. Vegas doesn't know what to make of these odds. What do you make of these odds? Who's getting this one?
I like Peyton Talbot in this fight. I think Cameron Salmon is one of the more underrated or overrated, rather, bantamweights out there. He's fought in a couple of fights that I think they have sort of tailor-made for him to win, and he hasn't even particularly looked all that great in those. He might have a wrestling advantage here against Peyton Talbot, but I think he's wildly overmatched on the feet. Talbot is kind of a more funky, more dynamic striker here than Salmon is, and I think as long as he avoids the grappling exchanges, he does just fine here.
All right. Billy Quarantillo, a minus 175 favorite. Yusuf Zalal, a plus 130 dog. But Zalal on a three-fight win streak, I do want to point out. Of course, that followed up a draw and a three-fight losing streak. So he's 3-3-1 in his last seven. Quarantillo is 3-3 as well, but he's just traded off wins and losses here. Loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. Coming off a win, though, who you got?
I'm going to go with Billy Quarantillo here. The bottom line is I would probably be more in on Yusuf Zalal if this was not a short notice fight for him, right? The fact that this is a short notice fight and he's filling in and he's coming in having not known he was going to be in the UFC even, I just don't think that that plays very well in his regards. I think Billy Quarantillo might have a slight advantage when it comes to the grappling here. He took down Alexander Hernandez a couple of times, took down Mowgli Benitez. You know, his hands got going in both of those fights as well. He managed to hang with Damon Jackson in the grappling in that fight. You know, if we're looking, really, the only losses he has are Edson Barboza and Shane Burgos lately. And those guys, you know, are absolutely phenomenal strikers. So outside of being phenomenal strikers, those are the only guys beating him. I don't think Yusuf Zalal on short notice sort of fits that bill. So give me Billy Quarantillo in this one.
Our dog of the week is Justin Taffa, a +215. Let's hear it.
Yeah, so Justin Taffa, the dude just drops bombs, and I think that's all that really matters here, because Carl Williams is a guy who I think we've seen up at heavyweight sort of be the guy who can sort of like grapple and lay on you and wear you out, and just about only that. I don't know that he has the ability to get by the hands of Justin Taffa in order to do that. The fact that Taffa is +215, I think, is only due to the fact that he's filling in for his little brother in this fight, but I've always thought he was the more talented of the two brothers anyway. So yeah, give me the more talented Taffa here to knock out Carl Williams.
Our parlay to play to wrap this up is Steven Nguyen, a -225, and Julia Pilastri, a -150. But it gets you, put them together in a parlay, it gets you +140 odds. Break it down.
So I like Steven Nguyen quite a bit in this fight, mostly because Jarno Ahrens is shown to be a tad bit one-dimensional when it comes to his fights. I really think he's got some good striking, but I think the pressure of Nguyen mixed with the wrestling of Nguyen is just going to be too much for him. As for Julia Pilastri, I was super impressed with her on the regional scene. I've always kind of been a fan of Julia Pilastri, and I think she's got a massive advantage here against Stephanie Luciano, mostly just because I think Pilastri can do a lot of great things in a lot of different areas. You know, if you look at her last fight when she was on Contender Series, the grappling game certainly played up, and I think that that's a really impressive facet of her game. And Luciano, you know, if we're being completely honest, did not look particularly good against Dalila Alencar in that those regards. So yeah, give me Pilastri mixed together with Steven Nguyen, and let's get some plus money.
Boom, we're having a party here. Let's keep it moving. What should we do next?
So we're going to transition now to my interview with Angel Pacheco, who is coming off of a loss on the Contender Series, but got his UFC contract anyway. We talk about that wild ride as well as his upcoming UFC debut at the end of the month. We're going to get that interview for you right now. All right, and joining me today is Angel Pacheco, who fights Kyle Lowren at UFC Atlantic City. That fight is on March 30th. So Angel, I wanted to start here. Obviously, you had a very different route on Contender Series than a lot of people, right? The cards come out, cross the board, 30-27, kind of a tough moment for you in your career. You go backstage, you're getting the medicals done. Take us a little bit through what was going on in your head at that time.
Yeah, right away, obviously, I thought I just failed. I did fail. I lost the fight, obviously. It was competitive, but I do think Danny had won the fight just off the damage and like the possibility of ending the fight. But yeah, mentally, I mean, I was just like thinking pretty much like I failed and I wasn't going to be able to kind of like continue to do this sport in order to like as a career. Because a couple years back, I had quit my regular job and focused on MMA, and my wife and myself saved up money so we could do that. And obviously I have a kid now, and we have a house and everything else, so we have like a regular life. And it was like, okay, this is an opportunity where I can actually make some sort of money doing this sport. So obviously, like, local scene, you're not making very much money. And it just kind of felt like I failed my family, essentially. So I was pretty emotional. I got to talk to Dana right after the fight. He went back and wanted to look at my ear and say good job or whatever. He told me I got my my win bonus, so I got the rest of the money as if I won. And that was like the last thing. I appreciated it, obviously, but that was the last thing I was thinking about. I was like, hey, you know, if you ever have like a short notice opportunity or anything, I'd love it if you keep me in mind. And he's just like, that's awesome. I love that attitude kind of thing. I fight because I love it, obviously. So it's it's not just money, but at this point in life, I do need to make some sort of money in order to continue doing what I love.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you know, you are coming to grips with the point that this might be the end, right? Like, this might be the end of your fighting career on a large scale. So tell us about how you got the notification. You know, were you watching on the broadcast? Did your manager call you? What was it like when you did get the call?
Yeah, I was in the hospital. Like, Danny was, like, probably not, like, maybe 2-3 steps away from me. We were both in the hospital. And we kind of talked a little bit before that. But I was sitting on a chair, and I was filling out some stuff. And my buddy, Tyler Matheson, had called me. And he was just, like, telling me what a great fight it was, this and that. At this point, I had talked to my wife already, and I talked to, obviously, my head coach, Brock Larson. He went with me in the ambulance. But, yeah, I was talking to him, and he was still watching the broadcast, I guess. And he's like, oh, my God, you just got in the UFC. And I was like, shut up. Because, you know, that's pretty rare. Like, I think it's maybe happened once other than that time. Well, quite, or 3 times now, because the girl after, or the girl before me got it, I think.
Yeah.
Or yep. Something like that.
Yeah, Carly Judice. Yep, Carly Judice as well.
Yep. So, like, I was like, whatever, shut up. Stop messing around. He was like, no, seriously. I was like, what? I just got a contract? He's like, you're a UFC fighter. I was like, oh my God. I was like, hey, I gotta call my wife. So I hung up the phone on him and I called my wife and talked to her. But yeah, I was just sitting in the hospital chilling. I didn't know anything was going on. I got excited, kind of like, you know, just super hyped.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that roller coaster of emotions. Now, obviously, after that, it's time to get back to work, right? And, you know, a lot of fighters talk about when they lose their first fight in the UFC, having to go back to the drawing board and changing some things. You've got this weird moment where, yes, you did lose, but in the same time, it made the president of the company you are now hired to wildly happy. So how do you rectify, like, you know, put together that concept that your style is exciting and people love it and people want to be a part of that, but also, like, there needs to probably be some changes and improvements to be successful?
Yeah, definitely. I think my defense in that fight was pretty bad. Honestly, in a lot of my, like, previous professional fights, obviously not fighting the same level guys, but I don't get hit much. I made a very big mistake early in that fight. I knew I couldn't sit on the cage at all. I knew I had to get off of it if he got me there. So I knew he was a powerful puncher and things like that. So, like, obviously following a game plan, there's certain things I felt like I could have taken advantage of, where I would take angles and then I wouldn't continue to go after him with it. All these things, like, build up, obviously, and make fights either, like, good for a fighter or bad for a fighter. So, like, if I would have been able to take advantage of certain key aspects of that fight, I think it would have came out different. Who knows, though? Obviously, he may have adjusted to those things, too. But, honestly, I think going into this fight, it's not necessarily changing my style. It's just getting better defense, one thing. Making sure, like, when I'm being offensive, I also have good defense, so I'm not getting caught and stuff like that. And then, just kind of sticking a little bit more to the game plan and kind of, like, being more urgent with the things I have to do. Because I went out there and I was like, I have a bad habit of, like, not considering, oh, maybe this guy hits hard too. So I gotta be on top. I gotta be, like, very aware and make sure that I don't take things like that for granted. I can't just, like, guys punch on that, you know.
I like that. Now, I want to talk about the stylistic matchup of that fight too, but before I do, I obviously got to ask you about the audience factor here, because, you know, you fight on the Contender Series in the Apex, you know, like 50% of all fights right now in the UFC are happening in the Apex, closed doors, not big crowds. But you have, like, one of the very coveted spots on a fight card, and one not even in Vegas. You know, you're getting an East Coast fight. Not that, I mean, far from home, but not that far from home in the grand scheme of things. What was it like when you found out that your debut was going to get to be in Atlantic City, big stadium and all that?
No, it's awesome. I was talking to my boxing coach, John Farland, I believe is the last name, but he was talking about how, like, there's been WrestleManias there. There's been, like, Tyson versus, I can't remember who Tyson fought there, but it's a place where there's been a lot of like cool events that have happened there. I'm excited about it. I'm excited it's going to be in front of a crowd. I know there's people from Minnesota that are going to be flying out or even driving out just to come watch. And I'm excited to see my friends and family and stuff like that after I get the win. But yeah, to be in a building with fans and stuff like that where it's not at the Apex, not that I hated the Apex experience, but I do prefer like the crowd and things like that. It's just a little bit more familiar, obviously.
Now, I also have to ask, you know, the first thing that you mentioned having been there was a WrestleMania. So I'm guessing that you grew up a big wrestling fan. Is that sort of what led you to MMA?
Yeah, a little bit. my uncle Gilbert got me and my older sister big into wrestling when we were younger. We used to love it. Like when The Rock and Stone Cold and all them guys used to wrestle, the Attitude Era and whatever. So yeah, I've followed wrestling for the longest time. And that's kind of how I got to. My dad ended up coming into the room when I was like 14 and threw like a UFC DVD on the bed and said, "Hey, there's no fighting. Watch this." He didn't mind wrestling. Like he thought they're great athletes and stuff, but he just knew it was like a scripted ending sort of thing. So he prefers like boxing or MMA, obviously. So that's how I got into it. My dad throwing a DVD on the bed, and watch real fighting.
I love that. I love that. Now let's talk about your actual fight next, because it's an exciting one. You're getting a guy who brings action similar to you. Lowrin is known as this, like, you know, he's a big aggressive puncher when he is punching. He's got big heavy wrestling style. You know, he was Cage Warriors champ, so he, you know, he's kind of got some credence behind his name. What'd you think about him when they did, you know, they called you and said, "Hey, this is who we want to be your first opponent"?
I think it's a great matchup. Like you said, he's very aggressive, like dude on the feet. He's explosive, athletic, good wrestler too. But I'm pretty used to that style, I'd say. Obviously, I'm expecting like the best version of himself. So I'm expecting a tough fight, but I do like the style matchup for me. And I think it's going to be a great fight for me.
All right. Well, you know, I usually like to end these things with a prediction. So tell me, how do you see this one ending come March 30th?
I honestly believe it'll be like a second or third round TKO. And be in the winning side of that.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. This has been Angel Pacheco, who fights Kaolin Lowrin at UFC Atlantic City. That fight, once again, March 30th. Angel, thank you so much for the time, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
And that's going to do it for another episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast. We want to thank you, the fans, for tuning in each and every week. We would not have a show without you guys. We also want to thank our sponsors, Game Apart Hydration, and remind you guys that you can check us out on Twitter and Instagram at Top Turtle MMA in both of those locations. And until next week, I'm Daniel Gooby Freeland. He's Shockwave Dave Tremonte. We'll catch you then.